Logan, Alan, I think there are a sizable number of select and standing committee members that we can start.
Yes, Chair. From the select side, we have 6 members present. We received 2 apologies from Ms. Mahlangu and Ms. Mamarekane.
Okay.
Chair, from the standing committee on, finance, we currently have 6 members. It's yourself, Doris Mabiletsa, Danilo Nkomo, Mr. Hill Lewis, Mr. Floyd Chivambo, and Mr. Voto Vessels. Dr. George sent an apology. He said he will join a bit later.
Okay. Now let's start this joint meeting of the Standing and the Select Committee on Finance to get a briefing from the Minister and Treasury officials on the procurement of personal protective equipment during the COVID-19 pandemic. Our agenda will be is opening, welcome, apologies, comments by the 2 chairpersons. Then the minister briefs the joint committees on procurement, followed by deputy minister, DG, and the staff and other officials if they will join him. And then members engage with the briefing and a response by treasurer. From there, we are going to have many minutes that we have been adopted from from the 11th of March that we'll have to adopt today. Welcome, Honorable Karim, Chairperson, Select Committee. Welcome, Honorable Members of the Standing Committee and Select Committee. Welcome officials from Treasury, led by the Minister, the Deputy Minister, the DG. Welcome officials from Parliament, media, stakeholders, and the public in general. We have convened this special meeting to get a briefing from the minister and his team on a matter of public interest, which is about the PPE contract and related matters of COVID-19 expenditure. The world, and South Africa in particular, is facing a devastating pandemic, COVID-19. This is leading to the economic decline globally and in South Africa in particular. For government to fight this COVID-19, it has imposed the lockdown, which restricts economic and social activities. This has resulted in the economic performance further deteriorating. As you will note, that pre-lockdown, the economy was under a technical recession, also downgraded by rating agencies. We are at a time when businesses are closing, there's a decline in revenue collection, there's a rise in unemployment, rise in food inflation, and uncertainty from society. We are also facing a rise in inequality and a rise in poverty. Also, be that as it may, this is mitigated by an increase in government expenditure. Government has come up with a lot of intervention measures, the 500 billion rand guarantee, distribution of food parcels, 350 rand grants and other grants, and the distribution of personal protective equipment, PPEs, also government has gone out to the market to borrow money from banks like multilateral institutions like the IMF and other banks. In the midst of all these interventions, there is a public outcry in regard to food distribution, PPE contracts, and other COVID-19 related expenditures. It is important for us, honorable members, to be given the briefing by the minister from the genesis where government started to embark on COVID-19 expenditures, that did they meet the constitutional requirement in regard to Section 217 of the Constitution. We hope that the tendering process was fair, competitive, equitable, and transparent. As we are losing more jobs, what is it that government is doing to make sure that there is localization, a local content, including promoting industrialization? But this can happen if we don't create jobs abroad by procuring stuff that come from outside South Africa. We are not saying that we should stay close on international trade, but if there are goods that can be manufactured here in South Africa, why are they not manufactured? And in the main, we talk about the PPEs. So, as I have said, that there is a public outcry in regard to procurement of PPEs from national departments, provincial departments, municipalities, and public entities. Be that as it may, we note the letter written by the DG, National Treasury Instruction Number 7 of 2020, to outline the processes that government departments and entities had to follow in regard to PPE requirements. Be that as it may, there are problems that we have witnessed in the past weeks, and as I said, there's a public outcry out there. So we want to know what steps have been taken so far and what steps are going to be taken to deal with this problem of PPE procurement. So before I request the minister to come and brief the committee, I'll request Chairperson Honorable Eunice Karim to also make remarks. Honorable Karim, over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. You've covered much of the ground. I can't think that I've got much more to say except to endorse what you said. Ours are not the only two committees that need to look at this matter. Hopefully the powers that be in both houses will prod the committees to, when they're back in about 2 weeks' time. The Health Committee, for example, the Justice Committee is very valuable to find out how the new multidisciplinary structures dealing with corruption are going to work, the role of the SIU and its performance. Obviously, they can't ask for specific details of the investigations, but overall progress is within our ambit as parliamentary committees. Safety, what is the police committee, and so on. And hopefully, Chairperson, we will work with these other committees, because it's not National Treasury's responsibility alone to take executive responsibility for monitoring these tenders and so on. Secondly, members are, as chairs, we're not here to prescribe to anybody, but it's just our role as chairs is also to suggest some broad direction. So to that extent, maybe it's useful for me to suggest, and I'm sure you'll agree, co-chair, that we obviously don't want to be a once-off thing. We should evolve a program at the end of this in some way, or the elements of a program, and we should monitor this regularly, at least once a month at such intervals. We need some sort of long-term, medium-term, and immediate-term approach to a program, and we should work closely with other committees. And finally, I think, without going too much into this, we shouldn't just look at it like the subjective factor, so to speak. In other words, chairperson, we can focus on who's doing this and dealing with them, as it were, as, you know, as stringently, as decisively, as swiftly as is possible by the appropriate state structures in the criminal justice system in particular. But chairperson, you also have to look at the what you might want to call the objective circumstances. Why are people doing this? And what are the material or objective conditions which facilitate this? And we come back to the issues that this committee dealt with in many ways and other committees on the need to, you know, ensure appropriate economic transformation, to ensure that there are spaces available in the private sector so that people don't rely on the state sector and tenders from the state to grow an economy and to create space for new
health workers.
So what I'm saying, Chairperson, is perhaps we can also look at that over time. Finally, we've heard from the President on Monday, the words are quite harsh and appropriately so, about scavengers and hyenas, and the chief whip of our ANC in this Parliament has spoken about the barbaric behavior of people who are accused of doing these things in these circumstances. And there's all these structures created. But Chairperson, as Parliament, as Houses of Parliament, we have to actually ensure what action is being done after all these commitments. So we should be very action-oriented after our discussion today and getting more information, Chairperson. We need some sort of program. We need to be decisive as Parliament. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson Karim. As you have indicated that we have to be objective, I don't think it will be proper for us just only to look at the negative side of PPE procurement. Lots of lives have been saved up to so far. Intervention that has been there in regard to food parcels and a whole range of other interventions has mitigated the impact that the social outcome we're going to have, more especially on the poor and those who are unemployed, those who have been retrenched. So lots of good work has been done in regard to COVID-19 procurement, but it is overclouded by all this malfeasance that we are experiencing. So I thought it is important for the minister to understand that we have been invited you here only to say all what has been done since COVID-19 expenditure started is negative. Will not be honest to ourselves, because we see lots of lives being saved, lots of food being distributed, and lots of interventions at schools and various areas where there are serious challenges. So that has to be noted, that we note the good work that the state has done in regards to COVID-19. Because if we don't do that, we'll also not be acknowledging the good work that is being done by health workers who are in the front line of COVID-19, and they will be devastated to know that Parliament does not even acknowledge what they are doing. So we are fully aware of the dangers of health workers that they are facing on a daily basis to save the lives of our people. But be that as it may, there are these people who are taking advantage of the procurement, both from business and officials in supply chain management. So thanks, Chairperson. Over to you, Minister Mboweni, and you are welcome.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much to DG and your team. And welcome to all who are participating in this conversation. Let me mention two things from the onset. Firstly, that we have organized a choreography which will guide our submission to this meeting. That choreography is that I'm going to make a few remarks, and then DG will then guide us through the detailed presentation which has been prepared, after which maybe Dr. Masondo might wish to say something. And then we'll hand over back to you, Chair, to guide the meeting going forward, at the end of which I'll return to give the closing remarks on our behalf. That's the first preliminary remark I wanted to make. The second one, and very important one, is that you might recall that when I rose in both houses to introduce the adjustment appropriation bill, or the supplementary budget, as I prefer to call it, I made the following statement, and I put this in not quite in quotes. I said, no sooner had we announced the budget for COVID-19 had the thieves begun to assemble at the door to plan to steal. End of that statement. I repeat, I said, no sooner had we begun to make allocations to fight against the COVID-19 pandemic had the thieves begun to assemble at the door with the purpose of stealing. Now, and how prophetic that was. Having said that, let me then introduce the conversation. Firstly, we have been facing this devastating pandemic. And we said that we need to rearrange ourselves, rearrange our budget, and aim to fight against the pandemic to the best of our ability. And therefore, the reprioritization of expenditure items toward the fight against the pandemic was an important step we had to take. And we proceeded to do as we've done, and I would like to thank both houses of Parliament for working with us until we crossed the line in voting for the adjustment appropriation bill. And I very much thank you for that. It was not easy. It was difficult, but I think you walked along with us. Whether you voted in favor or against is not the issue here. The issue is that we all participated in a democratic process to ensure that we cross the line with the adjustment appropriation bill. Much thank you, Akensa Sune. Now, then the question was, let's start the process. And the Director General in the National Treasury then issued the necessary Treasury instructions about how to go about procuring the required material for the fight against the pandemic. In particular, the PPEs and all related items. So the Treasury instruction is there and was issued by the Director General. Now, in an ethical society, one would have expected that all the parties concerned would have followed the Treasury instruction to the letter and to make sure that all that is being procured is in line with the Treasury instruction. Let me indicate, Honorable Chair, that if you go through the detail of the Treasury instruction, you will always find the following being very clear from the beginning. Description of item in the tender, the supplier's name, the unit price of the material being procured, the quantity, the number of items being procured, what is the total price, and is this price in line with the Treasury instruction or not? This is very important, that if all the parties follow the tender process, the procurement process, we would not be having this conversation today. But the fact and reality of the matter is that people found an opportunity to do that which is wrong. So the Treasury instruction is very clear. It says to all accounting officers, to all heads of departments, and gives them the direction which they should follow. At the end of the day, it is the working together between the officials of the National Treasury, according to the Treasury instruction, and the heads of departments and the accounting officers to ensure that we follow the procedure and we do not cut corners. But it also behoves the executive authorities, in this instance, the Department of Health, nationally, but also in the provinces, to ensure that the accounting officers and the procurement officers do that which they are supposed to do. And in this instance, it would appear that there is a prima facie case to be made that not in all instances was the Treasury instruction followed. And that then becomes the subject of the administrative system, the subject for the political or the executive authorities to follow up with the accounting officers. Secondly, it is now up to the law enforcement agencies to follow up on those companies which were awarded these tenders, to follow up on that which was done wrong, to ensure that the culprits are brought to book. And it's very important. There are those things that the National Treasury and the accounting officers and the procurement officers can do, and there are those of a criminal nature which must be followed by the law enforcement agencies. The third point I want to make is that faced with this situation, the Director General issued further instructions, and he's going to explain as you'll see in the presentation. And once again, as people follow these instructions, we would not be having this conversation. But clearly, these were not followed. And one of the key issues is whether some of the companies which were awarded these contracts were properly registered with the company registration office. Were they registered with SARS? Did they go through a competitive process? And so on. And so the administrative investigation has to show us that indeed this was gone into, and that the following companies competed for these contracts, and this particular company won the contract on the basis of the following merit scores. And they have to demonstrate that to us. In the meantime, I am having a conversation again tomorrow with the MEC of Finance to try and find out whether all these processes were followed or not. And if they were not followed, why were they not followed? And who broke the rules? And in my conversation tomorrow with the MEC of Finance, we're going to discuss and insist on the fact that all these contracts must be published for the public to see. And in publishing who won which contract, we also want to know who were the competitors and on what basis did the competitors lose. And also, we'll be interested to know about the age of the companies. When were they formed? Were they formed the previous night? Or they've been there before? or what was the case? What was the case with the PEP, the politically exposed people would like to know and deal with that. The fourth point is that there is a lot of discussion about what is referred to centralized as the centralized procurement system. And it's something that we can talk about, and DG Mukhajana will speak a lot about it, and I will buttress that at the end, because it is very clear to me that we have to tighten the processes. It is very clear to me that the trust has been broken in some instances, and it's very clear to me that the executive authorities and the accounting officers have to take the matter forward in a decisive manner in a very short space of time. We don't have a year to do this. We have to do it immediately. And as we respond to that which is wrong, we should also praise that which has been correct, as the chair has said. On that basis, Honorable Chair, we are also learning some learnings from the way in which the African Union has set a platform, a singular platform for the AU to purchase these health required materials throughout the continent. The common platform, common pricing, which then all African countries can purchase this required material from one platform with a price that is centrally negotiated. So we're having some learnings there, and I'm sure the DG, when he finishes, will talk a bit about that. I will, at the end, as I indicated, Honorable Chair, talk about some of the possible next steps that we should take when we come towards the conclusion of the conversation. Those were my opening remarks, Honorable Chair. I hand over to you so that you could maybe call upon the DG of the National Treasury, Remu Hajane, to proceed with the presentation. If that might please you, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Minister. Let us right away invite the DG to make the presentation.
Chair, good afternoon, and good afternoon to honourable members, and good afternoon, Minister and Deputy Minister, and colleagues. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you issues as outlined by the agenda and explained by the Minister. Maybe let me, at the outset, Chair, indicate the following and say that Section 76, Chapter 9 of the PFMA, Section 76, gives us, as National Treasury, the authority to make regulations or issue instructions applicable to departments. We do that on an ongoing basis. We also issue practice notes insofar as our work is concerned, especially from the Chief Procurement Office, sometimes from the Office of the Accountant General, and in some cases, the delegated functions, you will see some of those instruction notes or practice notes will be signed by the Accountant General, the CPO, or myself. So in this case, Chair, in the issue under consideration, as the Minister explained, there are a number of instructions that we've issued insofar as the issue about procurement of COVID-19 procure-related services are concerned. So we will go into detail with some of those issues. And honourable members, I will also request that we cast our mind backwards to what was happening in February and March of 2020 and the state of mind that the country was at, including at the time of the budget, what we were saying. And then finally to what the period when the president announced lockdown, and then we knew that COVID has fallen on us and we had to do something. So that period, if you remember, globally, was some issue that we obviously were worried about and we had to be concerned about. So I will request my colleague who's to bring the presentation on screen so that honourable members we can see and I can take you through some of our thoughts as we get to address the emergency procurement on COVID-19 related expenditure. So Chair, if you look at slide number one,
basically in the slide, I have listed, please go to the next slide, Laura. In this slide, Chair, I'm basically listing, I'm basically listing, Laura, slide number two, please. Yes, I'm listing this instruction note that we've issued since the disaster was declared, by the Minister of, COGTA, and at the beginning of the year. And these instruction notes were issued in terms of provisions of PFMA and FMA. And for PFMA related, they're all in black instructions and the red ones, same document, but we are making it applicable to, so that it's also applicable to procurement insofar as municipalities are concerned. So the provisions of this bulk procurement and procurement are the same. Next slide. And so what we've also done for ease of reference, we've also made sure that honorable members are having copies of these slides and we have distributed them. Now, in terms of National Treasury Inspection number 8 of 1920 or MFMA circular number 100, you'll notice that this is a 1920 financial year instruction. It is not an instruction that came now because of COVID. It's an instruction that has always been there like any other instruction. So basically what we said, we have basically said on the 19th of March that this is still applicable. And basically what this instruction note was doing was to facilitate the procurement of PP items that were already on the national transversal contract. So you will know that the masks, the body covers and body bags and everything that's got related to PPEs are items that departments buy on an ongoing basis. These were not specifically for now. So we have in the past had transversal contracts that basically were providing for these. And at the time when we issued these instructions, because departments were obviously concerned that, what are the others, where are the other suppliers, we also provided a list of suppliers from previous transversal contracts that were issued who gave quotations on bulk supply for items that were not on transversal contracts. In a way, we are expanding the base of suppliers who are there with this instruction note. But as you can imagine, there were limitations insofar as this instruction note were concerned. First limitation was that demand overshadowed the supply. When I said members, we must cast our mind backwards in the period in February and March, we'll notice that at the time, many countries were holding supply. Many countries were saying that because the pandemic was beginning to show effect in many, many countries. So as a result, we saw a situation where countries were competing against each other in terms of supplying, in terms of holding this. And the prices of transversal contracts were no longer reflective of the new market conditions, where the issue of demand and supply that has got an impact on price started to prevail. And we saw at the time, towards the beginning, end of March, availability of stock running out very quickly in terms of these suppliers who were on the transversal supplier database that was supplying these PPEs, because now we were needing more than what we normally would require because of what potentially was going to be challenges moving forward. Next slide. Laura, next slide. You will notice, therefore, that we issued the second instruction note, specifically now for noting what was happening with stocks running out from suppliers being not enough. We then issued instruction note number 3, which was the second instruction which advocated a central procurement agent approach. In this instruction note, we noticed that PP products were experiencing unprecedented and global demand, resulting in significant price increase and global shortages. Some of these products could not be produced locally in South Africa at the time. And we then had to make sure that it was going to take time for some of these products to be made available and not be able to deliver at the time when we needed. And Chair, it's time therefore to secure PP products like surgical and other masks, gloves, bodysuits, and many other manufacturing countries also imposed bans if
you remember, in March and April this year, where items were not available and prices then rose sharply, making it difficult and worse because of the volatility of the rand and depreciation of the rand that made things much, much worse. So, and in some cases where some of these products were secured, immediate upfront payments were needed and were required. And suppliers faced huge challenges in arranging immediate delivery of stocks. And then we thought at the time, through engagements, in various engagements, we thought a central implementing agent was going to be necessary. Next slide. Necessary because it was quite critical at the time that we were able as a country, you know, to make sure that when we buy in bulk, and thinking that obviously at the time we would obviously implement price. Now, again with this, there were limitations. Upfront payments required to procure bulk was an issue in most. And at the time, and we know, and we don't have this, government does not have a central system in place to actually procure goods centrally because of how our system has developed over time. And then at the time, a central procurement intervention was therefore required. And members, you recall that this issue caused a big challenge in the country at the time when after going through net joints and actually indicating to net joint that business for South Africa was, had a solution at the time, and Imperial Health Services was in coming in to support and act as a central implementing agent, both for the public and for the private sector. And at the time, the issue was that they have the capacity to actually provide logistic expertise and also to go out of the country to procure, in particular at the time, and you recall, items were only available, you know, excess supply global was around, available only in China and in South Korea at the time. So as a result, this process, as we are beginning to implement it, we then issue this instruction note. We try to explain how the instruction note was going to happen. But however, there was some misinformation about the process. There were issues of local participation, issues of less participation in supply chain processes, whereby clearly there was an outcry at the time in March, April, around the process as anticipated and favoring certain types of suppliers and actually having direct impact on price. And interested parties at the time were interfering. There were various interferences, and that, in a way, was a negative publicity in the country. Therefore, honorable members, I then decided at the time, without even further consultation with other people, we withdrew instruction note number 3 because of the challenges that were experienced in terms of how we were interacting with the process and how it was anticipated that Imperial Health Services and Business for South Africa, including at the time the Solidarity Fund, were going to assist in actually making sure that PPEs are not an issue. Next slide, please. In ensuring that PPEs are not an issue. So we therefore then made sure that we withdraw this instruction note number 3 and came up with instruction note number 5. Instruction note number 5 was simply saying, let's go back to emergency procurement instruction that was issued. Instruction number 5 was replacing instruction note number 3. And we made it very, very clear that instruction note number 5 is replacing instruction note number 3. And we were at the time saying it is therefore important that we still are in an emergency procurement mode and supplies were running short, suppliers could not meet the demand. And at the time we said, let's open it up, honorable members, let's open it up so that anybody who has material, who has PPE in the country, globally and other elsewhere, they must apply, but we had conditions applied to them. At the time, we said they must, that whatever they will be produced or supplied should be specified. The specification should be that of the Department of Health, World Health Organization, including the Department and of Trade, Industry and Competition for cloth masks in particular, because at the time, cloth masks became an issue, and we knew at the time that departments like education had to procure masks. And we said prices that will be supplied should be the same or lower. And we had in every of the attachments, in every of the instruction notes, we had attached reference prices that they could the suppliers could not provide at the price above what was set by us at the time. There was also another condition that said suppliers and manufacturers must be registered on the central supplier database. And once you register there, obviously all the other necessary, your tax matters and all of that will be obviously coming automatically in that space. After further consultation that took about a week or two or 3 weeks with, for instance, with COSATU in particular, because COSATU and other stakeholders in the country, including business formations, in particular business, go back, please. Laura, please go back to, In terms of slide number four here, bullet number four, after engaging with COSATU and many other stakeholders, we then decided that there should be other requirements that talks about local production, local supply of textiles, because at the time we needed huge, big numbers around cloth masks in particular, whereby industry, including the textile sector, we were seeing an opportunity for the clothing and textile sector, including for them to really start participating in the supply of this cloth mask in particular. So again, in this instruction note, like before, we provided a list of possible suppliers and manufacturers, and this we got from the Department of Small Business and as well as the National Bargaining Council for the clothing industry. Why were we doing this? We're doing this in order to ensure that we know the people who will supply the right quality and obviously will be then registered. So we did not, what this instruction note was strengthening what we said in instruction note number three, and in terms of the requirement, and in there, the key issue for this was that local production and local suppliers were and should be considered, taking into account the kind of discussions that we had with stakeholders, as an example, COSATU and then Black Business Council and others. Next slide. Now, there were limitations also, as you can imagine. One of the key things and that we noticed was that obviously all of what we are trying to do in an emergency mode is prone to exploitation. Because in many ways, we then realized that there are instances where a few suppliers would actually be the ones considered. And that was a limitation in the way this was approached, because you can fulfill all the four requirements, but then you still are the preferred supplier without actually the department exercising essentially what was not withdrawn. What cannot be withdrawn, Chair, I must emphasize, Honorable Chair, is that other procurement-related prescripts, whether in the PFMA or in the Treasury instructions or in the Treasury regulations, including the PFMA, are not withdrawn. They were not withdrawn. So it is expected still that supply chain officers and procurement officers would still have to subject themselves to emergency procurement as provided for in their current legislation, even before COVID-19, because they are there. Controls were also set so as not to be a burden responding to the pandemic in decentralizing procurement as we respond. We therefore wanted to ensure that good financial management procedures remain in place. But we also saw rampant misuse and abuse of public resources to related to this procurement. And then, obviously, we also noticed that it's important that we update this instruction note. We had then had a discussion in foresight. Second slide, please. Next slide. We then had an instruction in foresight for Forum of South Africa's Directors General, whereby the DG in the presidency, with the instruction from the president and the instruction from the collective of cabinet, also saw an opportunity to say, and still at the time when we released this instruction note, and I must emphasize, honorable members, and refer to the date of this instruction note. This was around the 26th of May when we issued this instruction note number 7, issued by the Office of the Accountant General, but obviously signed by myself. Now, these were issued to give accounting authorities and accounting officers proactive guidance on how to revisit their control environment in response to COVID-19. The title of this instruction I must just read it out. It says, National Treasury Instruction Note Number 7 of 2021, preventative measures in response to the COVID-19 pandemic that resulted in the national state of disaster. So we were, in this instruction note, giving clear instructions to accounting authorities and accounting officers responsibility in terms of reminding them of what is responsible, what they are accountable for. And as I said, as requested by FOSAP, an emergency procurement working group of large PPP projects was established under the chairperson of DGM to provide input to this process. We had various DGs, including state security, including the Hawks, the head of the Hawks, including the DG and the president, whereby we then went to FOSAS on two occasions. Now, FOSAS is inclusive of everyone, including provincial directors general. The purpose of this instruction note was to provide preventative measures as a result of COVID-19 emergencies, and they need to be responsive and flexible, whilst ensuring value for money and minimizing the risk of fraud, corruption, negligence, error, incapacity, and also ensure that internal control systems of a department, constitutional institution, and public entity consider, among others, the change in operating activities in the existing control environment, revisiting risk assessment processes, designing and amending control activities to address new or elevated risks, identifying information to support effectiveness and efficiency of new existing controls, reassessing, and I must emphasize, reassessing internal external communication and identifying additional control measures to monitor the activities. Basically, what we were saying here with this instruction note, accounting officers were being reminded that you are responsible. I'm saying this because many accounting officers, next slide please, many accounting officers would sometimes not pay too much attention and leave this to CFOs and also leave this to supply chain officers in departments. So by reminding accounting officers with these instruction notes, we wanted to, for them to ensure that we actually are serious about what we need to do and what needs to be done and at what point. So honorable members, with these three instruction notes in particular and the processes that we are trying to experience, at any given point in time, giving guidance, and at any given point in time, if you look at the annexures, we were reducing prices of certain types of supply impacted by demand and supply of that particular product, and in some cases we did reduce prices, and we were reducing prices ensuring that government is not taking for a fairer ride in terms of suppliers enjoying the benefit of high prices when prices are generally reducing. So we were reducing prices in some instances, in some, not all products, but in some products. And it was then expected of departments to ensure that they adhere to these prices. If the price of a 3-ply mask at any given point in time was 14 rand or 12 rand, we were then saying, indicate, including VAT, indicate the new price. And my instruction notes would at any given point say, the applicability of this instruction note is the day after the signature date. So if I sign on our members on the 29th of May, it means come the 30th of May, this instruction note then become relevant and applicable. So that's what we are bringing in the system, and we expect that everyone should subscribe to those. We are bringing in just some ideas around what we have spent so far in terms of COVID-19 related expenditure and taking you back now. These numbers change all the time, and it depends when you are running these, and it also depends how exactly departments are beginning to account for this, because it's work in progress. So the numbers may fluctuate and change as and when we present this, and as of today, this is I think around the 12th or so July when we ran these numbers that I'm going to go through. We propose in a supplementary budget that some 145 billion will be used as a package. And we obviously, as indicated in the supplementary budget, we indicated an amount and also recorded some spending. We also indicated what the money is going to be used for and what departments in particular. So I will skip this slide and go to the next slide. It's just for background purpose. The next slide, basically what it does, it basically tells you at a particular date, next slide, Laura, at a particular date, what was the expenditure and at a given point in time in July. Laura, please move to the next slide. Yes. This slide again tells you asset between April and July, what was the expenditure, and all of those, these are just, you know, examples, record of what we spend money on. And as we say, go on to the next slide, as we say here on our members, these numbers change, they are not firmed up, but it's to give an idea that we are tracking COVID-19 related expenditure in terms of our system. So this is to exactly demonstrate that we, at any given point in time, we will know who's spending what and how much in relation to COVID response package announced by the president. Next slide. Now, we are considering new controls on our members. We are considering new controls. I've recently, and by the way, what I must indicate along the way, I have been having discussions and formal and informal discussions with the Auditor General in terms of what he should be looking at, in terms of what we want him to look at, and what he has to do insofar as that institution is concerned. We'll be issuing, I've just actually, as early as yesterday, finalized and signed off on the forward, in my part of the forward, that will go to this preventative control guide that we will issue jointly, that aim at controlling and assisting management to identify the risk of misappropriation, fraud and corruption before a transaction takes place. Remember, the instruction note is just to tell you what to do. This is a guide that actually tells you how to do it, so that you will not find wanting. We agree to the AG that this time around, insofar as COVID-19 related expenditure, AGSA does not have to wait for end of financial year next year to start auditing expenditure of this magnitude. We said we'll do it as and his team is on the ground, will be on the ground, so that accounting officers can be held accountable. And this guide basically provides accounting officers with a toolkit of possible solutions to make preventative controls a reality. So basically, what we also are emphasizing, emergency procurement of PPEs and protective clothing is ended. And institutions have to revert back, because the issues of demand and supply are not an issue anymore, whereby you go to any clip today, you go to any shop, you will get sanitizers, you will get masks. They are easily available. We have boosted local production. We have to emphasize local production of face shields, of masks. All of that is now in place after a few months of challenges that we had in terms of how companies in South Africa can begin to take advantage of the opportunity last year. And we, obviously that has got an impact in terms of price. So as a result, we have the view that we can then go back to measures that we all know that are not, you have to then, in this case, be part of a procurement list, your the product that you supply, the price will continue to be determined by us. The price will continue to be dictated by us, because we think we are better placed to understand where the price is at any given point in time, without actually further exploitation. I'm not saying it happens all the time, but further exploitation by the state. And that procurement must be complied with all existing instructions for procurement. So, and as I said, we'll lock absolute price for PPEs and protective equipment, and we'll ensure that NT provide names to the names of all PPE appointed service providers to be published on our website, and so that it's easier for us to analyze aggregate data and actually ensure that procuring agencies are known and are there. Again, we are not limiting this to specific companies. Again, it will be an open process where anyone who will be able to supply, they must be known, they must be registered, including the issues, by the way, that the minister mentioned around how to relook at this area in terms of who can and who cannot be able to supply. We all know that in this instance, government employees cannot participate or provide such services to the state. If we have to expand that, we'll obviously do that. Next slide. Now, there are many issues under consideration, and I'm going towards the end now. There are many issues under consideration. We all know that the procurement bill is underway, and I know my friend Matthew Parks already indicated to us that, you know, we want to, we have to make sure that this bill, Chair, with your permission and with other fruits in Parliament, would expect that this bill, once it hits Parliament, that we actually make sure that, you know, it goes through the process, because it's quite important. We will, when need be, review existing FMA, take into account, you know, measures of emergency procurement and strengthening the accountability of accounting officers. What is important, and Minister Sarah must emphasize this, what is important and is quite key is that we have to start modernizing public procurement, including automating public procurement systems, will enhance due diligence and increase efficiency in processing requests. What do I mean by this? If you look at big companies or, you know, logistics companies and how they actually make it easy for companies like Macro, Checkers, Pick and Pay, you know, Discovery Health, Gifchem, and Pepsi, all of these companies that we all know, Chicken Licken, Kentucky, behind those, we believe there are automated systems that make the supply and of material and the supply of goods and services much easier. If the private sector can do it, why can't government begin to do it? We cannot rely on old archaic systems that do not in any way help us. Now, Chair, I would want to ensure that we actually, as National Treasury, and we are going to do that, ensure that we actually make this possible, whereby we have to look for many, capacity, whether it's in the private sector or not, we will look for it, and it will match it with the capacity that we have, in order to come up with state-of-the-art project management services in the procurement, preloading, distribution, inventory management, or PPE program rollout. We'll have to do that. We'll have to identify things that we can run centrally, jointly with the Department of Health, and we will be engaging deeply with the Department of Health around how to come up with regional warehouse solutions, e-warehousing solutions, an ICT platform that will make it easy for us to enable government departments to place centrally orders, so that a municipality in somewhere in Limpopo cannot be charged 40 rand when a national department somewhere is charged 15 rand for the same equipment or the same material or the same item that's needed. So we think by automating systems, it will also cut out the bureaucracy that's there in terms of suppliers being paid on time. It will cut out the bureaucracy where, for instance, delays are there in paying small or big medium enterprises in terms of payments after they've actually paid government. So we think that by automating and modernizing, I must emphasize, automate and modernize our procurement system should be in place, and that must be done urgently. And we are putting all efforts as National Treasury to design and develop, with the assistance of the private sector, design and develop an integrated ICT solution, whether it's an app that will be distributed across. We have to be modern in the way we do this, and this will eliminate all the challenges that we know and talk about. On that front, I'm going to actually make sure that, Chair, as Honorable Karim was saying, keep the committee informed about step-by-step processes insofar as this is concerned. We have to ensure that we have to think about continuous information exchange between how we can prevent, investigate, prosecute, so that future preventative measures are informed by investigations, lessons, and prosecution outcomes that may come out as a result of the investigation that we do. What we cannot keep quiet about, which is an issue, and Minister did make mention of it, is politically exposed persons and their participation in public procurement. This will require us to come up with more stringent review, including many other things around the service type provision, the age of the business, etc., and what the business is all about. Hybrid model of national procurement and local distribution or listed service to allow for economies is important, and we believe that anti-corruption measures should also be put in place. We must think outside the box in terms of how we're going to sort this and how we're going to make sure that our procurement system is fraud-proof in a way that we do that. So, honourable members, I will leave it here in terms of what we wanting to do and what we have done. But the key message is that the responsibility to procure steel lies in terms of our current law with the accounting officers, and they must be held accountable. If a department X in province X or municipality X has procured goods more than what the price reference list was indicating, that accounting officer must be held accountable. If they have appointed a service provider who is not registered, that accounting officer must be held responsible. If there are instances of fraud, corruption, and many other things that can be proven, let law enforcement process take, process here in the way that we want to explain this thing. So, Chair, I will leave it at that, and maybe, Chair, allow a minister or deputy minister of finance to come in and indicate if there are any other issues that I may have left out in my presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
I don't have much to add, because yourself, the minister, as well as the DG, you've largely covered enough ground. And what we're looking forward to guidance, discussions on this matter from yourself. The only thing I want to add is that obviously South Africans expect us to manage their money prudently, free of corruption. For instance, we spend around 1 trillion rand as government through procurement, buying goods and services. And as the minister indicated, it's very clear that in this instance, or in certain instances, insofar as the way in which some of the government departments, local governments, it does look like there's clearly instances in which the trust of our people has been betrayed insofar as the way in which we need to be managing the public finances. And I must just indicate once more as I conclude that we've put a lot of measures as government, but also yourselves as parliament, to put what I call preventative measures as well as reactive measures to make sure that we run our public finances prudently. I mean, on the preventative side, there's a number of internal controls that departments have, which range from rules, laws, instruction notes. But I do think that around that area, on the preventative measures, we do have a number of right people that were placed in these state institutions to help us in running accounting officers. But it's very clear that there are people in these institutions that are not really doing South Africans a good service, because who is in the state, who is in these institutions matter insofar as enabling us to manage our public finances. I do agree with Honorable Karim that the objective, we do need to distinguish the subjective as well as the objective circumstances that lead to these problems that we have insofar as the mismanagement and corruption in the state. But I just want to add that people do matter, because it's those people will actually change those objective conditions, the material circumstances under which we do government business. So if we have wrong people in these institutions who continue to betray the trust of the people, we won't be able to change the very same objective conditions that generate or reproduce the problems that we have. So we want to emphasize that as part and parcel of discussing and making sure that we've got preventative measures, the issue about who is in this institution matter a lot. Accounting officers does matter insofar as preventing some of the things that we have. And it's for this reason that in some of the institutions that we have, these things have not happened. But in certain instances, we can see that despite the measures that we've put in place, which includes the rules and the laws that we've basically put in place, we are not fully winning the war to fight with the thieves, as the minister will put it. And the DG has laid it out there that we are thinking about doing more insofar as the preventative measures in this regard. On the reactive measures, because some of these things, you get them after the fact, after they've happened, Chapter 10 of the PFMA is very clear on the financial misconduct, that any official, anyone who's bestowed with the trust and the responsibility to manage public finance on behalf of South Africans has to face consequences for not doing what South Africans expect of us. I must indicate, Chair, that insofar as the reactive measures, forensic audit, trying to find the thief, we do need to do that. But I'm increasingly getting worried that as corruption increases, our expenditure on forensic audit is also going to increase, because we'll keep on chasing the wrongdoers and people who are doing bad things. But the money that we should be spending to provide health services, education, and other things, we're increasingly spending it on chasing criminals. So it is a serious concern that as these problems increase, our expenditure is also increasing in trying to chase criminals in our system, and the system in the sense of government, but also outside government. So we're looking forward, Chair, to your guidance and criticism, because you are our mirror as National Treasury for us to look at ourselves on whether are the additional things that we need to do. South Africans rely on you to be their voices in taking a critical look at all sections of government to make sure that we manage the public finances in the interest of all South Africans. That's all I can say at this stage, Chair. I'm looking forward to further deliberations on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister, Deputy Minister DG. Let's move to the next item of honorable members of parliament to engage the presentation by the minister. Alan and Uleko, can you assist me in identifying members who will want to speak through the platform? I haven't received a single member here. Can also members indicate if they've got challenges in regards to raising their hands through Alan Kululeko, Comrade Karim, and myself? I see Honorable George, Honorable Dion George, Louis. Okay. Honorable George, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon, colleagues. Thanks very much for the presentation. It is quite clear. we have already seen that there has been a large amount of corruption already in the procurements of PPE. Now, of course, this is anecdotal evidence that seems to be coming out now. Now, that's clearly an enormously big problem, and I'm sure we want to eradicate that. But given that we are in this crisis and that there is now corruption in this PPE procurement process, I would like to know from the Treasury is what active steps are they going to actually take? So, for example, I mean, you know, when it's become clear that people are making huge amounts of money from this process, when it becomes clear that that's happening, what are they going to do about it? I mean, it's all good and well to say, well, we don't like it, etc. But the fact of the matter is that there needs to be action. And I think that's the key thing. So those individuals that we certainly believe are already stealing from the people under these terrible conditions, what steps are going to be taken there? Thanks, Chair.
To the Honourable Lewis, Honourable Ryder, Honourable Morolong, Honourable Shwambu, Honourable Abrams, Akbare Voter Vessels, and then later I'll call for others who will want to speak. Honourable Lewis, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the Minister and to the DG and his team for coming. I just want to refer to slide 13, where you talk about the new controls being considered for implementation. Firstly, my question is, the Minister has said that he would like departments and provincial governments to publish details of PPE contracts and the names of the companies that win those contracts, the names of the companies who do not win those contracts and why not, and so on and so forth. I just would like a specific commitment on the timeline for this instruction. The sooner the better, obviously. So I would like a specific commitment as to when the Treasury or the Minister will issue that instruction for the publication of all those details. Secondly, COSATU has not presented to us, but they have sent through a submission, which I have read through. And they complain about the fact that they wrote to the minister warning of some of these things and making some of these proposals as far back as May and received no reply from the minister's office. And I must say that this is a common experience of the lack of basic professionalism or courtesy from the minister's office. I also wrote to the minister in May proposing the creation of a special inspector general for COVID expenditure with powers to interdict and act proactively to stop some of the things that we now see being exposed, and also received no reply. In fact, one really struggles to ever get a reply from the minister's office on any official correspondence. So I wonder whether the minister could just please let us know how he would like members of parliament and important stakeholders to interact with his office officially, and why his office never replies to correspondence about these matters. Because some of those proposals that COSATU made and that we made as far back as May could have stopped what we are seeing now, because this was entirely predictable. When you have an enormous sum of money flowing quickly without proper procurement processes, because it's done under emergency procurement regulations, it's absolutely inevitable that that corruption will happen. So these things should have been foreseen, and we did write to him about that. Then I would just say that, you know, the Deputy Minister has made the point that there has been an enormous breakdown in public trust as a result of this. It really can't be underscored enough just how severe the impact on public trust in the government and the National Treasury and obviously as well the governing party has been as a result of these scandals. And I do think it is important that the President himself addresses Parliament on this matter, and I do not think that it's adequate. While it is obviously important, and we appreciate the minister's willingness to come and account on these matters today, I do think that it is a matter that requires the attention of the president and the explanation of the president to Parliament as well. That's it for now. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Ilu. Hello. Okay. Honourable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think at the outset, let me say well done to the Minister and Deputy Minister and DG for appearing today, and well done to yourself for calling for this so urgently, Mr. Chair. I think that puts you in a different category from some of the other people, because I'm gonna move on immediately and say, please excuse me if I appear a little bit agitated and angry, because we're just coming out of a 9.5-hour session in the NCOP yesterday where we passed the budget. In doing so, it was incredibly obvious that the majority of the African National Congress members in the NCOP have become totally tone deaf and haven't heard what people are saying, what the public is saying. Honourable Lewis has just mentioned the fact that there's been a loss of trust. There's been a massive swell of anger that's forward, and the response is largely tone deafness, because the reality is that everyone is now angelic. It appears that none of the members who sat through the National Assembly in the last term and sat through 8 votes of no confidence in the ex-president, now they're all standing up taking an anti-corruption stance all of a sudden. And I mean, you know, people that were actively involved in the disbanding of the Scorpions now standing up and saying, well, you know, no one agrees with corruption and it's got to be stamped out. It's all lip service, Mr. Chair and Mr. Minister. And the reality is, if you look at the LexisNexis library set for local government, the book that is 4 times thicker than any other law that's included in that is the MFMA and regulations. If you look at the PFMA and regulations and look how thick that is, you look at all the memoranda the Treasury puts out and sends out instructions to government entities on how to procure. All of these regulations are written, and yet we still see failure on a daily basis to bring people to account, to make sure that people are not stealing money that they're not supposed to be. People that are already earning million rand salaries are just making their lives even fatter and better through absolute abject corruption. And people are sick of it. It's now status forbade. We passed that. We now need to start seeing urgent action. And the reality is, if you haven't got the MFMA and the PFMA in a position where they can allow you to do your job and hold people to account, then there's a massive problem. What's stopping us? Those documents are there. There's a huge amount of paperwork that's gone in. They've been refined over the last 25 years, 26 years, and yet we haven't seen one person arrested and doing proper time for corruption in a senior position in government. So the reality is, the only thing that can be stopping it is political will. And I think that this is the issue, Mr. Minister. Your regulations are there. You need to be given teeth. There needs to be something that happens. Look at the Zondo Commission. There's not one arrest come out of it yet. People are, you know, what is that the NPA doing about it? They say, well, you know, now they've been given additional powers, whoopee. We need to see some action. This is what South Africans are crying for. We want to see some actual consequences that are happening. And that really is my criticism. I appreciate the work that's gone into the presentation today. I appreciate what's been going on behind the scene. Ultimately, it's just more red tape added to a process. It's just another, you know, little hurdle for someone to get over in order to carry on with the corruption that they've gotten away with for so long. And the problem that it's created is that it has become so difficult for the average business to enter into a transaction with government, that the only people that are doing so, the only people that are putting their hands up for tenders these days, are people that have got nefarious ulterior motives. Because the reality is, to jump through all the hoops that the MFMA and the PFMA and all of the now attached regulations require, to jump through all those hoops has a massive cost implication. And that's why you get a 3 rand pen costing 23 rand, and that's a good deal. That's without any corruption. Because the only guys that are prepared to do business with the state are guys that have got people that are going to jump through those hoops, and there's a cost to that compliance. We need to seriously look at how we're dealing with business. Regulations are good, but when it becomes overly burdensome to people and prevents good people from doing business with the state, we really need to look at what we're doing. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Ryder. Honourable Mrolo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, to say that we are discouraged by rampant corruption associated with the COVID-19 would certainly be an understatement. And of course, we are more interested in consequence management. Let me thank the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and the DG for their presentations. Let me get straight to my questions, Chair. In the first instance, I would want to know why did Treasury allow departments to procure and not create a centralized system knowing the risk associated with decentralized procurement? Two, as much as Treasury sets maximum prices, we know corruption occurs when quantities are inflated and never delivered. What controls are in place to prevent inflation of quantities? Chair, I would want to know whether there is no system that can automatically detect entities which have directors which are linked to the state. In fact, I thought the National Treasury CSD system can detect these things. Why are those systems not used to stop these entities doing business with the state? Because the last question is, you know, if a spouse declares that they are related to someone in the state, what is the, or how is the final adjudication made in that regard? Thanks.
Hello. Honorable Shibambu, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Chairperson.
Oh, okay. I thought there's a problem with the microphone on my side. Over to you, Honorable Shibambu.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't hear what the DG is saying in terms of the instruction notes and the guidelines that were given to all departments in terms of procurement of what exactly should happen. He seems to be complaining a lot about the archaic system and wanting to learn from the private sector, which in most instances is responsible for the mess in the public sector. So I don't understand in terms of the exact issues that have been dealt with thus far. Maybe you must give him another opportunity to give clarity on the following questions. One is, how much was allocated to COVID-19 procurement and how much was spent thus far? And what were the guidelines that were given to departments at all levels to then deal with expenditure on COVID-19? Was there a consistent price list for each product that had to be purchased in terms of all these COVID-19 procurements? And have departments at national level and provincial level complied with the guidelines and the price list that was given? If not, what has National Treasury done in that regard? Was there a guideline in relation to localization? And the other question that must be responded to is, was there a guideline in relation to procurement that is done by the Solidarity Fund? Or was it given the right to develop its own procurement policies independent of what the National Treasury would otherwise give as a guideline? And the issue that must be then dealt with in the immediate is, what do we do if the accounting officers have deviated from the price list? Because I don't think that is a very difficult thing to detect, that if sanitizers or masks or whatever PPE was priced at 10 rand and the department has spent 20 rand, what has been done or what is being done to recover that money? Because it's clearly an unlawful expenditure. Because if you say to the department that a price for this is 10 rand and then the department pays 20 rand or more, there must be some consequences that can be dealt with in the immediate. It's not an issue that can take a very long time. But also there have to be disciplinary actions against departmental officials at all levels and all spheres of government. in terms of those that have defied the price list and those that have deviated from the guideline. Instead of calling on the National Treasury to self-regulate and deal with mechanisms to prevent this, perhaps as Parliament we should have a mechanism in as part of our oversight obligation to closely monitor all the expenditures that are related to COVID-19 pandemic. That is one thing that we must do. So the critics of Parliament with relation to state capture or all the issues that are related to the Gupta was that Parliament reacted very late in terms of what should happen. Perhaps we should convene all these departments to say that here's the price list, how much have you spent, did you comply with the price list, and if there is no consistency in terms of those price list and regulations, we must then deal with the issue of consequences immediately and recovery of the resources that could have been wasted, instead of just complaining and then reporting all these issues to National Treasury, which has demonstrated thus far that it does not have the capacity. And they all came here, they all come here to say, no, we're still thinking about modernizing our procurement system and all of those issues that they have to be dealt with. But also there has to be clarity in terms of people who are politically exposed doing business with the state. What do we say about that? Because it looks like the National Executive Committee of the ANC says that there is nothing wrong with those who are politically connected, whether it's spouses, husbands, girlfriends, boyfriends of state officials providing services and products to the state. To come clarity, that must not be. But I think, Chair, the issue that must be then dealt with much more significantly is the issue of building internal capacity to procure, particularly these PPEs, because there is no need for middlemen in this particular context. Why can't we give an instruction that as part of its regulatory framework and intervention, National Treasury must then build the internal capacity to directly procure all these PPEs and all the essentials that are needed to fight COVID-19? Because the reliance on middlemen and women will lead to the whole issue of overpricing and quick markups on products and equipment that are needed to fight COVID-19. So outside of trying to self-praise or try to praise the National Treasury, I think we must be critical of its capacity to monitor its own regulations, to monitor its own guidelines in terms of how the monies had to be expended in relation to COVID-19. Because if you have got a law that cannot be complied with and you do not do anything about that, then you might as well not have the law. Because if you have said to departments that do this and they do not do that, there's not been any consequence that comes from National Treasury. There's not been anything that National Treasury has done to stop that. So maybe the only issue that we can make mention of was the interrupted IT tender, which the Gauteng government wanted to start with at the beginning of the lockdown. That was the only intervention that was made. But in relation to all other procurement, there's not been anything meaningful that is being done by National Treasury. I think that National Treasury must take responsibility for the corruption that is going on in all the departments and all spheres of government, because it lacks the capacity to monitor closely what is being done there in terms of all these issues. But also it must come out clear in terms of what is its guideline to the Solidarity Fund and all these things. What law permits you to have engagement with Imperial Logistics? What law permits you to engage with a business for South Africa Unit or something like that, which does not have any legislative foundation to then deal with procurement of the state, which you yourself can then deal with this much more meaningfully? I'm not convinced that National Treasury is a solution in terms of these problems. It's part of the problems that must be dealt with at a parliamentary level in terms of the constitutional obligation of oversight and clear recommendations of what is to be done to then deal with stopping now, not later, stopping now the corruption that is ongoing with relation to COVID-19. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I am trying to did you read what Bolavle and Joe.
Let me recognize Honorable Abraham. No, see.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you so much. Abulena. Chair, I think on this item of the interaction by the committee, it only says that Treasury comes back on the debate and just respond to some of the issues. Because sometimes it becomes frustrating that as members of the various parties, they raise issues, but it is after the call. The National Treasury has already spoken, and I'm sure some of the issues we raise, they also want to respond on this. So I just want to maybe propose that after we have spoken, we go back to them so that they speak, even if it's on a limited time basis, but it's public that we're raising. The first issue for me, Chair, the first issue for me really is what members have already raised, the issue of the tender system and whether it can be made open and transparent, because that's how the current government is different from past governments on the area of openness and transparency. We are not going to say that there is no corruption taking place, and the national executive of the African National Congress has made a bold statement to state their embarrassment. So I think everybody by now knows and sees that a lot is happening, but the thing is, what is it that we are doing? I want to agree with the member that said we want to see consequences. What is it that we are doing about that? Now, there's a deeply entrenched corruption network within the supply chain sections of our department. You know, I had interactions with some small business companies where they would complain about how even if they get a 30,000 tender, they have to give to the officials of the department some 15 or 20,000 of that a total amount. I want to say, Chair, it is still within Treasury to strengthen internal risk, to mitigate risk within the various departments. Whether you speak national, whether you speak province, whether you speak local municipality. And just lastly for me, Chair, you know, it is with the contradictions of a broad-based black economic empowerment, the concept remains relevant. However, in the midst of evidence widening inequality, particularly among black South Africans, now we need to ask ourselves a question. Is this system still working, or we need to come with another system, which in principle will do the same thing, but we close the gap. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Abraham. Akbare, Waterbusters.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I firstly want to echo what Jordan also said, is that it was and is entirely predictable what is currently happening with corruption involving COVID-19 funding and especially the procurement of PPEs. And the reason why I also say that is that in the normal tender process and the normal procurement process, there has always been price inflation. There has always been fronting, where certain service providers are procured from, which does not do that service. We all know that. We know what happens when a company is procured to, for instance, paint a government office they've never painted in their life, or they are supplying stationery but they've never sold stationery. That has always happened, and it has now just become much worse in this crisis. And why I also say that, Chairperson, is that Corruption Watch already wrote to National Treasury in April, alerting them to the fact that there is a big possibility of corruption occurring within these emergency procurement regulations. And the question is then, as a lot of other members have raised, is why was it not taken seriously? A lot of us saw already in May, even in April, we saw invoices circulated on social media, invoices circulated in mainstream media, showing inflated prices of PPE. But all of a sudden, a lot of members and a lot of government officials, and even with respect the president, is shocked at the corruption. And all of a sudden there's now this panic with regards to corruption, but we all saw it. There's already been organizations, political parties, alerting government to this, but it was not taken seriously. And that must be answered to. Chairperson, what also worries me is the fact that I think, in my opinion, it's much broader than only PPE, and it's also much broader than COVID-19 related procurement. We've been alerted to contracts that in this time have been awarded via the emergency procurement, whilst it has nothing to do with COVID-19. The SAP system at the Department of Labor is one example, where all of a sudden the red tape is cut and the contract is awarded to a service provider that has never provided the service before, and so forth. And that must also be investigated. We must not only look at COVID-19 related procurement. A member has always also raised the fact, and I think a few members and the Deputy Minister has raised the issue with regards to public trust. And Chairperson, then the question must also be answered. And there must be an investigation with regards to where did the PPE come from, which Ace Magashule donated to Cuba recently. Who procured that PPE, and where did it come from? Because if those questions are not answered, we cannot restore public trust. We cannot restore trust if those questions are there, if it is in the mainstream media, and if it is hushed and there is no actual answers with regards to those type of things. Chairperson, the only way to curb corruption is to ensure successful prosecution of those who are guilty of these contraventions. And jailing, especially the politically involved officials and the political leaders who are involved in this contraventions. And Chairperson, then I want to say that no procurement law will prevent corruption. The PFMA, the MFMA, all the circulars have not. And there's nothing wrong with the PFMA. There's nothing wrong with the MFMA. It's some of the best legislation in this regard in the world. But there's contravention thereof all the time. And that's the problem. For years and years, the contravention of the MFMA especially is allowed. And there's no consequences. The DG made the important point, Chairperson, regarding holding accounting officers accountable. And that should be the focus. But holding an accounting officer accountable does not mean a golden handshake, does not mean allowing the person to resign without disciplinary process, without facing a criminal action. And then also, it does not allowing the person to resign and then appointing that same person in another sphere of government or at a different government department or a different municipality or entity. Because that is what has been happening for many years. And that's why we are facing this pandemic of corruption. That's why this is occurring. and they should be much more focused on that issue, holding accounting officers accountable, really accountable, having consequences, not necessarily focusing on the procurement and recovering the funds that are lost. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Akbar. Honorable Mavila.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to, on slide 4, even though some of the products have been produced here in South Africa locally, there was still a problem that, you know, they won't be delivered on time. On this one, I just want to find out, well, if maybe this could be a chance to make sure that we make sure that our young people start producing, not delivering. You know, you go around with the 30,000 here and there, so that they must also produce at this locally. And also, on the other slide, I heard your concern when we were talking about, we're saying that the instructions notes that need to be followed are out there and they are not followed, and you are coming up with new measures. One of the new measures that you are talking about is to centralizing a procurement. I agree with Honorable Abrams. I think this can be debated. Why? Because we should know that centralizing procurement will not necessarily be a solution. That is my point of view. Because decentralized system is meant to ensure spread economic development across the country. Decentralized system is also important to facilitate localization. The current problem is that there are other oversight bodies that are not doing their work at local municipality. You have heard about those. There are other oversight mechanisms or monetary mechanisms at local and regional levels. That's what democracy is about, to ensure oversight is decentralized and empower poor and rural provinces and communities. I think that should be a point, because government procurement is important to in our economy, to transform our economy, deal with inequality and poverty. So decentralized oversight on procurement is key to ensure possible real intervention at all levels. And imagine, I could be in the system and I don't have these gadgets, because everything is centralized. When the system now is saying to me, I must come and provide services, I don't even know. So I think I agree, perhaps, you know, we should debate this thing issue, this issue of centralizing the whole thing. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable. Is there anyone before I call upon the Chairperson, Honorable Karim, to take the platform?
Thank you, Chair. Only one point, Chair. I could not get my hand up.
Oh, Mr. God. Jandu, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I only raise a point of concern. Yeah, listening to the National Treasury presentation, it gives me that the presentation is giving emphasis around procedures and guidelines. Now, the question one wants to ask is that, in terms of accountability, we have the PFMA, we have the MMFMA, which is the legislating or an act that is guiding in terms of government funding spendings. Now, the National Treasury have given us the National Treasury instructions, and also we know that each department must have an internal control, and each department must have internal auditors. Now, the the question that I want to raise is that the guidelines or instructions from the Federal Treasury, how is that effective aligned with the PMFA? And how is it effective and efficient aligned with the MMFA? So to make sure that those are not just instructions that one can just ignore to say that, okay, if somebody just giving me instruction and I will still do my own thing. So, Chairperson, I think one needs to be really able to be conscious and look at the facts so that each department give a detailed on each procurement that was procured over this period of COVID-19, so that one have a clear picture as to each and every procurement that was made per department. So that because we need to focus on the real problem, Chairperson, so that to root out corruption, we need to have a comprehensive and a detailed record and a report that will be outlining as to each and every procurement that was made, so that we have a very clear understanding as to fulfill our role as MPs, to make sure that we know exactly as to the detail how this process was unfolding. Thank you very much.
Enkosi Mhlekazi. Akbare Dutoy.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll be brief and not repetitive. I think one thing that hasn't been mentioned is the fact that the department has also incurred fruitless and wasteful expenditure with regards to the sanitizing of schools that were standing empty for months on end and then being sanitized before the children went back to school. It is common knowledge that this virus doesn't live for a long period of time. And I think this is also something that needs to be looked in as to whom gave the instruction to sanitize those areas that didn't need to be sanitized. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dutoy. I think we're done from members. And let me hand over to Honorable Karim. Over to you to make a comment. Before you take off, after Honorable Karim, I'll request the Minister to come back and with the DM and the DG to respond to the questions and the comments from Honorable Members. Honorable Karim, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Comrade Chair. Firstly, I think I agree with others who say that the instruction notes are all fine. I think from what I can tell, at least, that National Treasury did what it was required to do in terms of instruction notes. But it's not having an effect. And Comrade Chair, I don't know how much National Treasury alone can be held responsible as against government as a whole and the criminal justice system structures to deal with that. But clearly, DG Minister, I think we all want more action from National Treasury. So perhaps, DG, you can come back with in the report. Is there any action that has already been effected to use the PFMA and MFMA to take a single accounting officer through the processes of consequences? Is there a single one? There's nothing we've read about in the media or heard about, but are there actions? We're not asking for names. Are there actions already underway to use the PFMA and MFMA? Secondly, Comrade Chair, it was your suggestion, which I wholly agreed with, and the committee collectively, both committees agreed with, because COSATU was here then when the issue popped up, and they gave us a set of documents, not just their own submission, but in it, like everywhere else that we've come across this, there's reference to shoddy PPE equipment having been given. Niao has been making lots of noise about this because the consequences are very severe. So again, is action being contemplated, and if so, what? Where a PPE provider has delivered PPE not of the minimum or required standard, and there have been consequences of the fraud that Miyawu claims, of people getting sick and maybe some even dying in the health sector. What is being done about that? Surely there are in the instruction notes some provision of minimum standards, and if people haven't met them, is somebody in National Treasury or government as well monitoring that and referring that to the criminal justice structures? Thirdly, you know, Comrade Chair, I think many of us across the party political divide, we will agree with a lot of, well, not agree necessarily, but we think a lot of the proposals that come from COSA are reasonable, and they should be considered by National Treasury and government. So at some stage, maybe you'd want to reply more concretely to it, like, COSATU has this idea of a rapid response court system or court process, or rapid response courts is what they say. I think it's something that needs to be thought about. Obviously, it's the Department and Ministry of Justice that need to look at it. They referred to the 2010 courts we had, which processed issues rapidly. Fortunately, then there weren't many issues to process, but why don't we do that? The issue is DG. Does National Treasury have the capacity to do this? All the, do you have the capacity to actually implement it? Then I don't want to get involved, you know, about, you know, how the NPO could be panned out this. But it's related to a point I tried to make earlier in a very brief way. And I would like to come back to that. There's a view here from Mr. Ryder that the ANC was tone deaf. I don't agree. That's his view. I think it's really the point I'm trying to make, which is, you know, the way the opposition sometimes comes across, I don't think they mean it like that. Certainly Mr. Ryder doesn't, to me at least, having got to know him himself, thinks this. But they almost reduce corruption to a biologistic, you know, a certain like inherent thing in certain people that predisposes them to be corrupt. And that is what made the ANC defensive yesterday. I'm not saying Mr. Ryder suggested that by any means, but some of his colleagues. That is why people got defensive. But it's just something I want to share publicly because I don't have the mandate to do so. But in the ANC discussions before the budget, there was quite a stark discussion about the corruption and how we shouldn't be defensive about it. So I think it came across the way it did in the NCOP. It's because the entire debate, Comrade Chair, became about corruption. It wasn't about appropriations. It wasn't about saying, has the revised set of appropriations been sound? Could we have moved money from this program to another, or this sub-program to another? Could we have a better system of monitoring these revised adjustments, and what are we as committees going to do about that, and so on? It became simply about the entire corruption issue. As important as that is, it shouldn't have been the sole issue, but it's not for us to discuss that here. I'm sure similar things occurred in the NA debate. So I don't think the ANC is tone deaf, Mr. Ryder, but not yet. And on the issue of the scorpions, 3,500 delegates. Chairperson is not the area to discuss it. I'm happy to engage with the Ryder offer. And 3,500 delegates in Polokwane decided on it. It's for the ANC as a whole to discuss whether it was right or wrong. I have my very strong views about that. And I think to reduce it to one or two subjective individuals who had to play the role they did in terms of a mandate given to over 3,500 delegates, not going to help us here, Mr. Ryder. Let's focus on the issues. The issue is, across political party divide, we're all outraged. Not only you angry. Don't make it a subjective matter. All of us are angry. The minister is angry. In fact, he referred to what he said at the outset. Look at the strong words used by him, the president and the chief whip of the ANC. Now, none of this is insincere. It cannot be. No party is stupid as to, you know, be so tone deaf in a circumstance like this. But, Comrade Chair, I'll come back to a point that I think we need to look at. Yes, we must act decisively against those who are corrupt. Yes, we must see action, especially from the Justice Committee, on the new structure set up. Will they deliver? Will they actually deliver? It's a good structure that's being set up, but will it deliver, this SIU structure and so on? It's not us. It's the Justice Committee that must do that. But the issue remains, Comrade Chair. In a way, the DM himself suggested it. We can spend hundreds and thousands of millions of rands on forensic investigations and the criminal justice system. They are challenged enough as it is. We have to look at longer term things. Otherwise, we're back here 30 years from now. Not you and I, Chairperson, and those of us here. Back. We have to understand the structural conditions, if you like, the material conditions, the context within which this corruption takes place. Otherwise, we reduce, look, nobody, Comrade Chair, nobody is born to be corrupt. Nobody is genetically predisposed to be corrupt. So we have to look at what are the structural conditions that produce this. What is the context for this? And Comrade Chair, part of it at least, without rationalizing the wrongdoing of people, part of it is the nature of the economy. It's a highly monopolized economy. Comrade Tito and so on know this better than I do, right? It's a highly monopolized economy. To create an African or generally a black middle class, a manufacturing class, is not easy. And in the circumstances that we have this, there is a tendency for a newly emerging manufacturing strata or industrial class or emerging bourgeois or petty bourgeois to invariably turn to the state for tenders. The difficulty with that is that we need to create spaces for these people in the private sector to grow without being so reliant on state tenders, firstly. Secondly, this idea of middlemen or rent seekers, as Minister Tito will know more than I do, is not going to create an industrial, a new industrial or new manufacturing class. We need to review where BBBEE is going. So that's the point I'm making. Not a subjective factor in the sense that we need the right people in the right space. It's creating a response to those who reduce it to a subjective factor. People are inherently corrupt is the subtext of what some people say. And I repeat, not Mr. Ryder. He's not that sort of person. But the effect of what he says borders on that. Although he doesn't intend it, I have no doubt he's not that sort of person. But I want to say there's a lot we can say. But we need immediate action, which is what I think every member of this committee is asking for. We need a medium-term strategy, but we also need a longer-term restructuring of the economy, transforming it and de-racializing it, creating spaces for people to become a strong entrepreneurs in the private sector without having to over-rely on the state sector for tenders. That is all I'm saying, Comrade Chair. I don't think you would disagree with me. I certainly don't, dear Masondo, I certainly know wouldn't disagree with me. And I suspect most of us in the ANC will agree, and hopefully some of the other parties. That's what I meant by looking at the objective conditions. May I once again stress before I pass on the chair? I'm not speaking as a chair now. I'm subjectively putting my views. You're the chair right now as I speak. But I'm simply saying, Comrade Chair, we are not in any way by what I'm saying rationalizing the horrific, horrific corruption. The president put it very well. Hyenas and scavengers. And the chief would said it's barbaric, all of which is apposite and correct. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson Karim. Let me invite the minister to respond to comments and questions asked by honorable members. Over to you, Minister.
We also, Honorable Chair, we also had a closing choreography, if you don't mind, which is DG is going to deal with some of the issues, and then I'll come and give the final reply, and then we can let you go for to prepare dinner, if you don't mind, sir.
Oh, okay. The DG can come in with the choreography.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair. I was muted. I'm very sorry. I was simply saying, Chair, thank you very much, and thanks, honorable members, for the questions and comments. They will certainly help us to make sure that we actually modify and plan accordingly and then come up with a product that will be actually a better product than the one we are working on now in ensuring that
this procurement regime is actually changed to a point where it's satisfactory or it avoids all the loopholes that are currently there. Just maybe directly responding to some of the questions that honourable members have asked, in terms of slide number 13, there was a question around will we be able to publish contracts and tenders, and I think in the spirit of transparency, Chair, we should, we have to look at some of the, even when we engaged with the IMF in the letter of intent that the Minister of Finance wrote, we did indicate that because that was a concern as to whether, you know, we are not going to be in charge and control. We will certainly publish, and I think in the spirit of transparency, we should do that because there's nothing to hide. This is all public procurement and it's all in the public domain. And in terms of when we will issue this, we will have to finalize, Honorable Hildewis, in terms of how we do that and when we do that. But the principle is something that we don't have an issue with, and I think the Minister of Finance did indicate that before. Secondly, I think the question on COSATU, we met COSATU, I personally sat in that meeting, online meeting, there were letters of exchanges, and that's why I said, you know, Matthew Parks is on the call, he will confirm that we met, you know, we did exchange phone calls, we exchanged letters, and that's why instruction note number 5 was written the way it was written. That was a born out of a consultation and discussion engagement, close engagement with COSATU, because we also received their letter around May 21st, 28th, somewhere there. We responded in June. We had a meeting around 8th or so of May. And apart from the other calls and calls between the Secretary General of COSATU and also the Deputy Minister Masondo. So there has been engagement. So, Honorable Louis, I don't know, you may just maybe, you know, try and get the facts there to just make sure. But Honorable Park, Mr. Matthew Parks can confirm this. Now, in terms of why did we allow provincial departments to procure? Honourable members, our system is not designed as such in the way that we control or procure everything. Procurement happens on a daily basis in South Africa. Of the 1.4 trillion that we vote in, the bulk of that money is through procurement every day, whether it's pencils, whether it's stationery, petrol for military, you know, all of those things we procure on a daily basis. And provinces also procure. Remember, provincial governments on their own have their own processes. There are provincial treasuries, provincial accountants general, provincial CFO forums, internal auditing departments, external auditing, all of these. So we expect that the system is in place to actually ensure that departments procure. And this, by the way, also is applicable to the procurement of medicines and protective equipment or PPEs as it is by different departments of health in national and non-provincial departments. So that's standard. Now, what we are saying now, it's clear that for specific PPEs and the submission that we are making, and what I hear some of you all remember saying, that for some PPEs we must centrally procure. There are pros and cons, as some members, I think Honorable Mabilis and Honorable Abraham, were very clear that there could be challenges if we procure centrally. But we have demonstrated that in some instances where there are transversal contracts, some of them work whereby prices are then set at national level, and then in that way we are able to control. But we are saying we are busy finalizing how this is going to work in a way that we are suggesting, and so we may not have direct answers now. Now, let me just address the question of capacity of the National Treasury. A few members did raise this. We may argue that we may not have the optimum capacity that we would want in terms of skills base, in terms of numbers of people, in terms of areas to touch, because clearly here you're dealing with the whole of the state, both in state-owned companies, one, public entities, two, and all national departments that we have to deal with, including provincial departments. So the capacity will never, ever be enough to actually touch all corners. The system and the PFMA and MMFA are designed such that accountability also is delegated in some areas through provincial treasuries in terms of the role that dictated to in the law by the PFMA to what provincial treasuries and provincial treasuries should be performing in terms of their roles and responsibilities. And also the system is designed such that you have the same committee at, from an oversight point of view in terms of legislature and their role and what role they should be playing and what they should be held accountable, different heads of departments in provinces, including, by the way, in municipalities. So the design of the state is such that our role is then limited in the way that we can engage. But nothing stops us because the Constitution is very clear in terms of the role that the Constitution gives the National Treasury in terms of our role insofar as procurement is concerned. And so in exercising that, you may find that we do that in a way that we've always been doing. But that doesn't stop us that if there's an issue that we pick up at a municipality or province that we cannot intervene. We have intervened when matters were brought to our attention, and we are intervening as and when it is required. In terms of the budget allocated to the department, COVID-related budget, we have attempted to list the amounts that have been set aside. But again, as I say, before COVID or in an COVID-free environment, departments will still procure items that are related, whether it's masks and sanitizer. Departments will always procure those because those are essential goods needed in a hospital or a clinic environment. But in this case, the quantum of which became an issue and the amount that we had to deal with, including the specific allocations that went. And by the way, the amount that were allocated, this was over and above the amount that provinces themselves have set aside for increasing departments and budgets of departments of health, budgets of the other departments in provinces. So we can, Honorable Shibambu, make sure that you have the numbers, but what we have in terms from a spending side, as I said, the classification of which in some cases is not 100%, and my presentation says that in a way that has been classified to, so it will mean some general entries that must be passed so that appropriate and excellent spending should be part of the guidelines that we've issued. And if you go deeper into the instruction note number 7, that I was mentioning of 2021 from the OAG, we expect then all of these types of expenditure to be separated and be reported as such, including what the AG is going to look for in terms of the guidelines that we are also issuing to by the AG and myself. So clearly we will then be able to see related COVID-related expenditure. In a normal environment, such expenditures, whether it's fruitless and wasteful, or whether it's irregular, you'll only see that at the end. You won't pick it up. Think about how departments respond. Section 22 or section 20 of the PFMA dictates that departments on a monthly basis must respond or must actually report spending on a monthly basis in terms of spending on goods and services and spending on other categories of expenditure. They supply that, and on a quarterly basis we publish that. Now, at that point, in terms of our normal day-to-day operations, you are not going to see any wrongdoing. What you are going to see, you are going to see budget and total spend for the month or for the quarter. But however, in terms of whether it was spent in an irregular manner, that normally comes at the end of the financial year. But if it happens in the year and it is brought to our attention, nothing, by the way, stops us from investigating, like in this case now. And that's why I think there's a special regime that we agreed on with the AG that they are not going to wait for financial year end, but they will come in now to understand how much has been spent, what has been spent, and who, by the way, and we'll pick it up when the report comes through. In this instruction note number 8 of 2021, honorable members, we did indicate that departments are expected on a monthly basis to report any expenditure above R1 million on COVID-related spending. So we expect some departments are doing it, but some obviously are not doing it. So as to why they are not doing it, we'll get to that in terms of as we engage with them. But however, as I say, the capacity, and all our members to an extent, you are correct, the capacity to monitor every little expenditure item on COVID is not possible. It's not humanly possible because you have all of these departments, including public entities, that we have to look after. It is expected, and that's why we place the responsibility on the accounting officer. If I have to be asked now, today, as National Treasury, all I know I bought 5,000 masks for National Treasure, cloth masks. I instructed the corporate DDG, corporate services to buy. And now I expect, and if I find out that the DDG, Mr. Starim Gomezulu, did not pay 20 rand or maximum 25 rand for a cloth mask, he must tell me, together with the CFO and the head of supply chain, and if need be, I must take appropriate action. If I willingly knew as accounting officer that I'm spending more than 25 rand on a cloth mask, then the Minister of Finance and the allowable process must take into place. And if I don't act, then Minister must act on me, because I would have failed to act on on someone who did not comply with the law and with the regulation. So the accounting officers remain accountable, and they remain at the center of what we should be. We rely on them to actually be our eyes and ears on the ground, including, by the way, let's not leave the provincial treasury, because the same role they have. If you look at, for instance, and I'm taking Gauteng as an example because it was in the newspaper, the provincial treasury head of Gauteng must be accountable and be held. We will ask questions. She must answer. If need be, if there's any form of disciplinary action that must be taken, the province must institute. The accounting authorities or executive authorities have certain responsibilities in terms of acting against accounting officers where they could not act. And I think that must happen.
That's a fine. That's a, that you just stop speaking.
Even Morolong today was accessible from Southern Egg.
Oh, I lost it. I'm back. I'm sorry, honorable members. I don't know what's happening.
What is village in Japan or Northwest?
No, I'm not in Northwest. I'm in Gauteng.
Okay.
But I'm originally from Brest. What do we do if accounting officers deviated from the price list? As I say, if I deviated, action must be taken against me. If I deviated from the list, then disciplinary action must be taken against me. That is in place, and I think authorities given in law must kick in when clearly we have not acted appropriately. Now, we did not, and Minister of Finance can come in here in terms of, he's a board member of the Solidarity Fund in terms of the processes. But in our case, in my case, I did not issue any guidelines, Honorable Shivambo, to the Solidarity Fund in terms of what they should be doing in terms of procurement. But we have a discussion. Myself and the chair of the board and the CEO, I personally had a meeting with them around making sure that the processes are in line with the prescripts expected of them, in terms of ensuring that there's maximum value, because government is putting money in there, and myself as an individual in South Africa, and I'm also contributing, by the way, 30,000 rand to the Solidarity Fund. So I expect them that value for money process must also kick in place. But as I say, the minister can come in there in terms of that kind of role. Now, the fact that we withdrew instruction note number 3 was demonstration that the processes that we thought were going to unfold insofar as Imperial Health Services and the way business for South Africa was coming about caused a problem and a challenge for us. And it was on those basis, honourable members, that I withdrew that instruction note. I cancelled the arrangements even long before they could start and fully be operational, because there were challenges in terms of who was getting a preference, who was being considered for supplying, etc. And I have issues with that, and we did discuss this at length within the Treasury and also within the broader collective of many other DGs. And we withdrew that instruction note and replaced it with instruction note number 5. So there were loopholes and challenges there, so we were quick enough to respond after engaging not only with COSATU but also engaging with, as I said, Black Business Council, including many other fora and engagements, because that was not intended in the way that it was, including, by the way, engaging directly with the Solidarity Fund on this matter before I even withdrew that instruction note. So in terms of politically exposed persons, I guess Minister will take that and what the issues are. We don't want to rely on middlemen. I think that's very clear, or middle women or middle people, in terms of internal capacity to build internal capacity in the state should be an issue that I think we generally, not only a treasury responsibility, but the whole of government should be responsible for. Because it's important that we ensure that we build local capacity, we actually give opportunity when there was no opportunity, especially to companies that were previously marginalized. It's important that the procurement regime of South Africa takes into account all of those challenges. And we did come to this committee and indicate the same previously, Chair, that preference, opportunity, must the whole process in terms of the whole of government procurement, you must recognize clearly that the whole of South Africa, including issues of black economic empowerment, because those are policies that must be implemented in ensuring that access and opportunity is given to everyone who has got the capacity and who has demonstrated the capacity to not only manufacture but also supply these much-needed equipment. So, Chair, I will leave it at that and ask Minister of Finance to wrap up in terms of some of the issues that I may have left out. But I think, Chair, for the purpose of the questions that were directly related to us, I was able to capture most of them, unless if I, mistakenly left some. But Minister of Finance can take it from here. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Digit. Minister, before you come in, Honorable Lewis insists that he wants to raise an issue so that you are able to also respond to the issue that he might want to raise. Honorable Lewis, quickly, because we are running out of time. Remember, we've got more than almost 8 or so sets of minutes to attend to.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I just wanted to reply to the Director General to say that I was quoting directly from Mr. Parks's presentation to the committee. The DG suggested that I must just get the facts there, but I'm literally quoting from his presentation to our committee that said they had received no reply and were concerned by the fact that they had received no reply. So, perhaps it's the DG that must just get the story straight on that. And then I would really like to press the DG and the minister on a time frame. It's all well and good to say we agree in principle. Everyone on this meeting agrees in principle that these matters must be published transparently and publicly. And indeed, one provincial government has already done that in the Western Cape. The point is when it's going to be done nationally. That's all we want to know. It's not good enough to come and say, well, this is our idea. When we all agree on that idea, let's get it done. So, Chair, I'd really like to propose that the Treasury reports back to us in a day or two, maybe 3 days at the most, as to when they are going to require all government entities to supply them with these details for public publishing on their websites. Thank you.
Chairperson, can I just come in, please?
Okay. Honorable,
I don't know that, DG, I don't know that you responded to the question. Do you know of any action in process against any accounting officer in any sphere of government about PPE abuses and corruption? Are they being held to account? We don't need to know. I don't know whether it's appropriate to ask you and in what sphere, but how many do you know of, anyway?
Okay. At this point in time, I've never gotten any reports that suggest that there are any accounting officers or individuals who have been accountable, who have been taken to task or any consequent management. Nothing so far. But I guess all of that will come through as the AG and I are getting engaged with this department, and we are unpacking some of the anomalies, and we bring them to the attention of some of the heads of department. This definitely will come. So I think because now it's an issue and we are expecting reports to come through, and if there are any deviations in terms of, as an example, if it's price list deviations, we expect accounting officers to take responsibility and take to task. in some cases. All we hear now is anecdotes, and you know, here and there where some officials have been suspended or a threat of suspension, etc. But there's no case that I can show or that demonstrate to date, except that you know information is being gathered and evidence is being put together. Thank you.
Chairperson, now acting as a co-chair, I think it's reasonable to ask the DG within a certain space of time, maybe 10 days or so, to give us a report on progress in that regard. I don't know what you feel, Comrade Chair, and what the committee members feel.
Okay. I think it's reasonable.
We will certainly in 10 days make sure whatever information we have, we'll immediately work on it and within 10 days report back to Parliament, to this committee, on what we have found out across the state as a whole, including provinces and national departments.
Okay. Thanks, DG. Over to you, Minister.
thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Ministers. I mean, Honorable Ministers, Honorable Members. I just came from a cabinet meeting earlier. I would like to put aside the political disagreements and political squabbles, and so we deal with the issues before us. The key question is, what are the next steps to be taken? And I think the Director General indicated that certain administrative steps are being taken, and I think it would be good if honorable members could pay attention to what he said. It is there written in the submission before you. That is at the administrative level, and you can have a look at that. I hear issues being made, but it's political again, about letters being replied to or not. I won't go into the detail about the fact that members of parliament have the privilege of asking parliamentary questions and not to bombard my office with letters. Can answer those questions publicly so that every member of parliament can read our replies. But I think we also have to be careful not to be unduly manipulated by people outside will come to the committee and claim that they have had no responses from the National Treasury, whilst on parallel to that, they are holding meetings and discussions with the National Treasury. That is very disingenuous, and it's not correct. Also, I think honorable members must be aware that some people, even including from within the trade union movement, tend to promote their own industry and subsector. And so I think we should be careful that we don't become victims of lobby groups coming in whatever form they do, and so on. The issue of the timelines of publication of the contracts that have been won by one company or the other is something that I think is quite urgent. It shouldn't wait for too long. In fact, during the course of this conversation, the MEC of Finance in the Free State sent me the list of the companies which received the contract in the Free State, and that can be found immediately on tender bulletin number 17 of the 17th of July 2020. So she has published that already. Of course, the witness with a tender bulletin and the list of companies that received the tenders is that it does not tell us who are the shareholders of the companies. It doesn't tell us who are the directors of the companies. this. So we need to publish a list that also does what Polanski's would have called, it deconstructs the shell of the company and tells us exactly who is inside the shell. And through this process of the deconstruction, we'll be able to have a better sense of what's happening. And so tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, as one of the next steps, I'll be having this conversation with my colleagues, the MECs of finance from the different provinces. But let there be no doubt whatsoever that these discussions and the next steps and so on might in any way whatsoever leave a vacuum in the administrative system. The administrative system continues as outlined by the Director General, and we need to stick to that. What all this points to, honorable members, is that the state, being such a large buyer of goods in the market, large, the largest sector, has a lot of capacity to influence the direction of the transformation and direction of this South African economy. And that, given its size, it's important that the procurement system works in tandem together with the political system that we have in the country. Our political system is that we have national, provincial, and local government. And at each sphere of government, we have executive authorities and accounting officers. And I think if we follow through the political and administrative system properly, we should be in a position to control this procurement system very well. I'm quite certain we can do that. As DG Dondo tried to indicate, if something wrong goes on in the National Treasury, I have instituted disciplinary hearings against him. And if I find that there's anything that suggests an untoward behavior and theft, I have a responsibility to report him to the law enforcement agency. That should apply to all executive authorities in national, provincial, and local level. But our political system, as we all know, also makes provision for oversight by elected representatives at local, provincial, and national level, and the various responsibilities which they have. And indeed, when we come across issues on which we feel that no action is taken, nothing stops any member of parliament of the provincial legislature or local government from instituting criminal cases against people whom they think and have information that they've done something untoward and corrupt in the process. I welcome any suggestions on how we can strengthen the capacity of the capacity and capabilities of the National Treasury. I'm not averse to any proposals in that regard, but I'm quite certain that as things currently stand, the National Treasury has a team of highly competent officials who I have no reason to believe that they are incapable or have no capacity whatsoever to perform their functions. Now, I think that the overall direction in which we're going as a country will require that we strengthen our political system, strengthen the role of the executive authorities and the role of the public representatives, strengthen the auditing and accounting profession, strengthen the prosecutorial capacities in our society, and ensure that any malfeasance is taken care of. I'm still very concerned about the fact that nothing has happened to the people who looted the Giani Water Project. And this matter is being raised with the prosecutorial authorities. And indeed, in any other
place around the country. There needs to be concrete action being taken by the law enforcement agencies as well. I conclude, Honorable Chair, by thanking you very much for the opportunity to have this conversation with you. I've tried as much as possible not to do any politicking. I'll leave that for another day. The matters that we're dealing with here are so serious that they require all of us at this hour to work together in order to right that which is wrong, but in the process, and not to paint every conflict with the same negative tone, because it's not the case. And also to be aware that when somebody has been awarded a contract of, say, 90,000 rand, it is not a gift. It involves going to spend the funds allocated on an appropriate way, in an appropriate way. And finally, the disease of two finalists, I don't like, I'm sorry about this. Finally, I think the issue of the Solidarity Fund has been mentioned. And I think that because the Solidarity Fund has received part of the funding from the state and also from the citizens of this country, it is quite correct that this committee should seek an audience with the Solidarity Fund for them to take you through their processes and what they have done with the mandate that has been given to them. Honorable Chair, I thank you very much. A class of economic ministers is waiting for me at our first five, but I'll wait until you end this part of the meeting. I will be unable to stay for the part where you deal with the minutes because I think that's your housekeeping. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Minister. Deputy Minister, DG, National Treasury officials. As I said in the beginning, that we don't want to paint everybody with the same brush. We like to pay our homage to frontline workers, be it health workers, be it security cluster, law enforcement agencies who make sure that the disaster management regulations are enforced. We would like to pay homage to public servants from national, provincial, up to a local sphere of government who work very hard to assist the command councils which are there in place, run around. I know of officials who even work over weekend monitoring funerals to make sure that the families that are in bereavement comply with the disaster management regulations. And there are many officials who are very honest when it comes to supply chain management. Also, we want to make sure that we pay homage to service providers who are honest in providing services to the state and with particular reference to COVID-19 services. Because we mustn't leave this meeting with an impression that every supplier who is involved with the COVID-19 procurement is corrupt. That statement will not be associated with this committee. We must isolate officials in supply chain management who are within the network of corrupt service providers. And something must be done to correct that network of corrupt officials and corrupt service providers. But credit should be given to those officials and service providers who are doing their work honestly so. As much as we want the Auditor General to be in full swing, But we also have internal audit committees, which are supposed to do their work, because the Auditor General is not that much staffed that he can be doing everything at the same time and also be dealing with the audit outcomes at the end of the year. Let's activate the internal audit committees to make sure that they also do their work. All this wrongful conduct should not be used to condemn BBBEE. It will be wrong to say that all what is happening is as a result of a black economic empowerment. No. The state, as the minister has alluded to, is the biggest buyer, is the biggest employer, and it should be a platform that is used to empower the previously disadvantaged. And within that, the president from time to time talk about the capability of the state, which should be used to empower small enterprises. It's very important that the small enterprises should come on board through many programs of the state. And as this committee, or as these two committees, we frown at a narrow black economic empowerment and we want to champion for an inclusive economy. And also the issue of localization, Minister, is very, very important. The rand should circulate in South Africa to create jobs and empower SMEs. The rand should not fly out of South Africa to go and create jobs in other countries. Surely not at this stage. The rand should circulate here in South Africa, create jobs, and for SARS to collect more revenues. As you have indicated, Honorable Minister, in our calendar, we have an outstanding meeting with the Solidarity Fund. Allen and Kululeko, let's create space when we come back from recess that the Solidarity Fund should come here, and Treasury should be part of that meeting. And I think, if possible, Comrade Karim, let's also bring police to this meeting, because Treasury does not arrest people. Like what, how we are dealing with the issue of Steinhoff and other, the issue of illicit financial flows. Those task teams also have got police in the form of Hoffs, SIU and other agencies. I think the next meeting should be a bit broader. National Treasury, Solidarity Fund, and the police. You will actually indicate as to which section of or division of police should come to this meeting, because people have been raising issues of law enforcement, and that falls within the law enforcement agency. The issue of cooperative governance. We will have to recommend cautiously to Treasury, because the Treasury does not have the powers to take over powers of provincial and local government. We have got Chapter 3 of the Constitution that must be respected. Chapter 3 of the Constitution talks about a government, three spheres of government, which are distinctive, which are interdependent, and which are interrelated. We no longer have a central government like before 1994. True. And we don't have a tier of government. We have got spheres of government. So there have to be protocols. If a particular function which is performed by another sphere of government has to be taken by another sphere of government, I think we should respect constitutional provision, because we might want to make such a recommendation and it flies against the constitutional provision. So I will be hesitant for us to recommend right away that let Treasury centralize everything that has to do with procurement of COVID-19. I don't think it is as easy as that. But we want to make sure that there are consequences in regard to those who are on the wrong side of the law. And as Parliament will continue to play oversight, and as I've said, Honorable Karim, I think we'll have to look at the date, yourself, myself, and the Secretariat, when Treasury, Solidarity Fund, and the police should come to this meeting so that we deal with some of the issues that we have raised today and other related issues. Thanks very much, Minister, Deputy Minister DG. You are released so that we can go to the next item of minutes. Thanks very much. Honorable members,
thank you, Chair. Can I just comment pretty quickly?
Thank
they
you,
don't
sir.
Have to repeat. Yeah. About going forward, I'd like to suggest, Jefferson, we think about this, but once a month or maybe once every 3 weeks, Treasury needs to appear before us. It doesn't always have to be the Minister or the DM to report on progress in respect of the issues we raised. If we go for once a month, then it should be a standard Tuesday or Wednesday of each month, but every 14 days, they should give us a report. So we have a written report in between. Every 2 weeks, they give us a report. Every 4 weeks, they appear before us. But we can discuss the mechanics of that. Secondly, I think we should draw in, Comrade, we've discussed this offline, the trade and industry and police committees. But I think you and I should write a joint letter to our, a letter to each of our House chairs to suggest to them that the criminal justice system should be held to account far more effectively by our portfolio committees and select committees. And then when we meet with police and, let's say, the new SIU structure, the multidimensional one, I think we should have the relevant committees there. So it doesn't get seen as if we're taking over their role. But beyond that, I also would like somebody on our side to write to the DG about outstanding questions that haven't been answered. So Jordan Lewis, I see. No, it's not Jordan. Somebody else wanted to have a follow-up question. Yeah, it's Jordan Lewis. Can't you put it in writing? I didn't get a reply to my question, Comrade Chair, and I didn't want to pursue it, but in writing it should come. So will the researchers note this? The question from Jordan Lewis can be sent to them. I'd also like to remind the researchers that are asked, is any action being taken that they are against any PPE that fell below the standards that had consequences, or even it did, for somebody's life or health? Comrade Chair, I agree with everything you say. Thank you. Just to make one more in-house matter, there's a confusion on our own select committee side. The minutes are all joint minutes. We can participate fully in them. We'll only vote separate because we have joint meetings, so the minutes must be the same. They can't be different. So select committee members, please stay behind and have your say when the chairperson of the NA committee leads us on this. And then, you know, you vote on it separately, Comrade Joe. We vote on it separately. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Comrade Yunis. Let's go to minutes. Mr. Tebo, you have sent me minutes. There's something wrong with my technology. The 11th of March.
Chairperson Maswangani. Yes, SECOF will start on the 23rd. The 11th of March, it was a meeting of SECOF that happened last quarter. It was not a joint.
So the standing committee will be the 23rd of April?
Yes, starting from 23rd April until the last one.
The
Chairperson, you are offline. You're muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. All right. The minutes of the standing committee starts from the 23rd.
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Members of SCOF, Thursday 23rd, 2020, virtual meeting, briefing by National Treasury. Those are the minutes. Attendance, parliamentary staff. I'm not sure which. This is only one page, because sometimes when it comes to the cell phone, it gets corrupted. Okay, let's move through correction. Honorable members, minutes of the 23rd April 2020. Are there corrections? Alan, you will assist me in identifying speakers.
Chairperson, I must be honest and say you're not the only one struggling to get the information in front of you. I'm also struggling. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, here they are. Are there corrections on the minutes of the 23rd of April? Okay. Can somebody move for the adoption?
It's Honorable Magistrate.
Honorable Mavileta, you move for the adoption.
Yes.
Mavileta moves. Second. Vessel, you want second?
I'll second, Chairperson.
Honorable Akbar, voter Vessel is seconded. Okay, agreed. Let's move to the 30th. Yes. Be patient with me. We are getting used to this new system of working electronic, because if we're in Cape Town, we'll have duty, we'll have Alan, Tebuko, and everybody assisting. 30th April. I must first write Tebuko here, then write minutes. Then write 30th April. Hey, Sister Tebu, where are you?
Africa.
I'm here, Chief.
Hey,
it's your web. Send me the minutes, isn't it? We are dealing with which one? The 30th of
April. Third
of July. June. July. June. No, are you surviving so that you can share in the meantime?
Chair, it's Alan here.
Yes, Alan.
If I can maybe just say that I sent minutes, including Teboho's minutes, and I think Teboho subsequently sent her minutes, but I sent an email yesterday morning at 24 minutes to 9 with all the minutes for adoption.
Is that the iPhone that I'm using? I got the minutes of the 23rd. I'm struggling to get minutes of the 30th of April. Honorable Abrams.
Hey.
Are you able to get minutes of the 30th so that you can assist in the meantime?
Hey, sir, I am not good at these things.
Chairperson, I've got the minutes. I've got the minutes in front of me. Do you want me to? What must I do? Must I share my screen?
Yes, please.
You can assist in sharing with Alan. Hey, I'm just getting used to this technology. I've got the ones for 23rd, but the ones for 30th, I'm struggling. How do you share it on the screen? Can you assist?
Yeah, let me see if I'm allowed to. Let me just try here.
Alan?
It won't let me share my screen. The Parliament has to allow me to do that.
Okay. It's like I got them 30th April, 13 hours. Is it the right minute, Alan?
Yes, that's the right one.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's the same one that I've got.
Yeah, 13 hours, 30 April 2020. Attendees, officials, parliamentary staff introduction, proceedings, deliberations by members, response by National Treasurer. Okay. There they are on the screen. You have issues in regard to corrections of the minutes of 30th April? Any correction? Anyone to move for the adoption of the minutes?
Chair,
it's Dorothy again. I move for the adoption.
Honorable Mavila Kraft moves for the adoption. Second. Honorable Nkomo, second. Thanks. Alan, let's move to the minutes of the 5th May.
Yes, Chase, 5th May.
5th May. Can you put them on the screen? Okay, there they are. Any correction? Anyone to move for the adoption of the minutes of the 5th of May?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Honorable Zanel moves for the adoption. Any second?
I move to second the minutes. Honorable Mabikleta.
Honorable Mabikleta. Second. Let's move to minutes of the 19th of May. I got them. It was at 9 o'clock on Tuesday. Can you put the minutes on the screen, Alan? And good luck. Any correction? Any move for the adoption of the minutes?
I move for the adoption of the minutes, Chair Skosana.
Skosana?
Yes.
Kijema? Kijema, Mandela?
Kijema?
Did Skosana not move for the adoption? Second?
Colleague, sir.
Is it Abraham?
That's correct, Professor.
Okay, because we have to record the mover and the second. Okay, then let's move to the minutes of the... which one, Alex? We are going to the minutes of which one? The 25th of June.
Teboho, are you online?
Is it June? 9th June. Did you have a meeting on the 9th of June, Alan? Alan and Teboho, can you hear me?
Yes, Chair, I'm just checking as...
Yes, there is a record.
The minutes of the 9th of June. Is there a correction? Any mover for the adoption of the minutes?
I move for the adoption.
Kosana moves. Abila,
I second.
Abila, second. And then the next set of minutes is it the 25th? Alan and Tebo, good luck.
30th June.
We also had a meeting, seemingly. Didn't we have a meeting on the 25th?
Yes, Chair, there was a meeting on the 26th June.
Yeah. 25th,
okay.
Yeah, the minutes, honorable members. Correction. Any move up for the adoption?
I move for the adoption.
You move for the adoption. What, Bosa? Bosa, where are you?
Nikona.
Uyabona ukuthi sisenkingeni netechnology mani
khumbule
GH unikeza amaminete yeyey kunzima lete ukuphi udokotela usepitamarisberg uhlobo
And Mars?
No, I'm in Cape Town now, Chair.
Who's that Cape Town?
Yes, I just came back.
Who's that one? I had to explain again. I don't know.
I just came back from KZN, Chair. Yeah.
And it's getting to summer. There it is. It's still in winter. 30th of June. We have adopted those ones, eh?
I said no, on this one.
Not yet.
Which
no,
one?
On them, sir. On the 30th of June agreement.
Okay. Then,
can I have, a correction?
Yeah.
Under the presentation highlighted the following. The first sentence, talks about COVID-10 instead of COVID-19.
Okay. COVID-19 stands for Chinese Office of the World Health Organization, December 2019.
Whoa.
Yes. That's why it's called COVID-19, coronavirus. But it was set in December 2019. So that's the correction. Can somebody move for the adoption of the 30th minute?
I move for the adoption. Honorable Nkomo.
Honorable Nkomo moves for the adoption all the way from Tembisa. Daniel, are you hiding? We haven't seen your face for 3 months.
It's not
working.
Okay, I'm around.
Why? We don't want the paper, we want to see you.
I can't show my face, I'm in hospital.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was not aware. We wish you speedy recovery.
We saw this in their own useful way.
Oh, okay. Okay, no, we're right, Zanen. We wish you to recover. Zanen, come on, move for the adoption. Second,
I was just wondering, sir, on this minute, towards the end, whether, because the long sentence there at the end before closure says, he thanks all officials. And because it's a new paragraph, I was wondering if we could say the chairperson or the co-chairperson, because it's a new paragraph.
Okay. Noxie, Alan and Evo,
where are we now?
Look, we are on the last paragraph of the 30th. You see there, where they closed marked by the co-chairperson. Before closure, there is a stand-alone sentence there, which is thank all the officials for the presentation. So, Honorable
okay.
That you should put the chairperson, because it's a new paragraph.
Okay.
Yeah, so you deal with the English and the rules. Okay. The next set of minutes, is it the 1st of July?
The 10th.
Eh? This is
the 10th, sir. I'm supposed to do correction.
The 1st of July 1st, and then to the 3rd.
Yeah. 1st July, No, this is it. First July minutes are there. 9 of rituals. Any correction of the minutes?
Yeah.
issues, debate, tax, spending, reforms, finance, adjustment. Any move up for the adoption? Any move for the adoption, Chair? Concerning moves for the adoption, Honorable Abrams, second. Then, minutes of the 3rd of July. Where are they? Let's see the 7th. The 1st of July. Do we have minutes of the 3rd of July?
We have them, sir. It starts at 9. The national, the national treasury responses to public submissions.
You will start to realize the value of people. When you are with them all the time, you don't sometimes realize their value. People who print messages and put them on our table, you can still play a very important role. Hey, now we are administering everything on our own.
Can I put a minute, sir?
Okay, yeah, I got them. The 3rd of July, 9 o'clock. We were dealing with proceedings and all those deliberations by the committee members, response, national treasury, closing remarks. Okay. Are there corrections? Anyone to move for the adoption of minutes of the 3rd of July?
I move, Chair.
Honorable Mabila Esa moves. Second. Okay. Is this Daniel? Honorable Mabila Esa moves for the adoption. Who's second?
I second, Chair.
Honorable.
Comrade Chair, it's Eunice. Can I just come in here? Very quickly.
Yes.
Just to seek of members, Comrade Chair, that when you have joint meetings, the minutes can't be changed by either committee. So the discussion is joint, only the voting is separate. Now, if CECOF members have any problems with the minutes, they must intervene now. It's only when you're voting that they can't vote, as long as that, just call out to remind them. Because all we're going to do when you finish is we're just going to call for mover and seconder, that's all. Okay, thank you.
Cheers, Mr. Curryman, Ms. Moshwangani, it's Alan here. Also, just to note that the minutes are edited by 2 content advisors, so there may be words and phrases and stuff different, but the content is the same.
Yeah, but that can be sorted out. The point is about, you know, they can sort of source it out. The point is the content is what we decide. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Comrade Unit. Dorothy Mavila is a move. Daniel Fomo, seconded. So we are going to the minutes of the 7th of July.
Chairperson, is Mr. Park still on? If Mr. Park is still on, I just want to ask, maybe we can ask for overtime, or Kasatu can assist us with getting some overtime for doing this now.
What do you want, right? And now you want to cut out the bed. What do you want from Park?
I want overtime. He must fight for us, Jay.
Don't start battling with Park, we won't finish it. Zuti, where are minutes of the 7th of July? Okay. There we are. 7th July minutes. It was Tuesday, 9 o'clock. Members, are there corrections? Anyone to move for the adoption? Sending comments. Move up for the adoption.
Abraham.
Shepherd. My body is very slow moving.
Abraham.
Yeah. Honorable Excuse to the new system. You see, when we're in Cape Town, we've got
to... It's not about you, my brother. It's about your members. You know, what? They must just say, they must move faster on moving and seconding. I mean, really. It's your members, you.
No. This is the new way of things. People are not used to this combat units.
Oh, no.
Abraham has moved. Seconder,
Chair.
Kozan.
Yeah, it's a new normal.
Namhlanje you have connectivity throughout the meeting. That's great.
Yeah. Chairperson, it's not a crime if the DA seconds a minute or the EFF or the Freedom Front. It's not against the rules of Parliament.
Oh, Camp, where are you?
No, he can't. Remember, he's my, on our side, member.
Where is the toy? Where are they first?
They get their chance, Honorable Chair.
All right, Dutoy, you are too quiet today. You only ask one question.
Chair, I think the matter of corruption has been depleted. Everyone knows what's currently going on in government, so we'll start that fight again in the morning.
Okay.
Don't promote your campus.
You can confirm the meeting. You can fight another
stage. Okay. Who second? Noxie has moved for the adoption. Who second?
I second.
Magilet second. Minutes of the 14th of July. The meeting started at 9 o'clock. Deliberations, the briefing by National Treasury on the disaster management bill. Correction. Move up for the adoption.
I move. Dorothy.
Honorable Mavile from Nina Park. Moving for the seconded by Noxie Craddock. I'm trying to get connectivity. The seat for Matthew Goniu. And then where are we? I'm confusing things. 22nd July. Correction. Move up for the adoption.
I move.
Honorable Mavileta moves. Seconder.
I second.
Daniel Komo. Second. 28 July. Kosana.
I move, Chair.
Kosana moves for the adoption. Seconder. Murolo, where are you?
I have a proxy.
Where is Morolo?
Yes. Okay, I'm speaking on behalf of Morolo.
He's speaking for the Northwest.
Okay, who's the seconder? We're on the last set of minutes, the 28th. Honorable, Abraham has moved. Who's seconding? Kosana, yes, Kosana moved. Who's seconding? Is it Abraham? Okay, Abraham is seconded. We are done with the minutes. Let's hand over to the House of Lords. the upper house.
Yeah. Thank you a long last.
Right, I hope you'll be as fast.